Hi everyone and welcome to another episode of Amazing AF. I hope you have all had a great few weeks. It's been crazy here, so this is the first episode I have been able to publish for a while, but I promise it is worth the wait. Today I was lucky enough to speak with Tracy Jewell. Tracy is an accomplished author. She's a mum. She has recently become an accredited mental health first aid instructor. You would probably know Tracy from Married at First Sight season 5. She obviously, being on reality TV, opens lots of doors and also can open up to a lot of negativity and bullying, which unfortunately Tracy was on the receiving end of a lot of it. But that is not what comes across with Tracy. What comes across with Tracy is an independent, strong, courageous lady that has her shit together. And I really admire her speaking openly and honestly about her experiences today and what she wants to do to help other people in similar circumstances and basically educating people to recognize when the wheels are starting to fall off to basically implement something straight away before they actually fall off. I really thank Tracy for taking the time to talk to me, and I really hope you enjoy this episode. Stay amazing. Hello and welcome, Tracy Jewell. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I appreciate it so much.
Thanks for having me, Hayley. It's very exciting to be here.
It's awesome. And I was just saying how fabulous you look and it's really annoying.
I must have got enough sleep last night. So that's all.
It's like, how can someone look good on computer?
No, it's just always sleep, right? It's always about how much sleep you get.
It is. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Oh my goodness, I can't believe how far we are into this year already.
I know.
It's crazy, right?
It's nearly April. It's scary. Yep. It's really scary. I'm
counting down the days for the chocolate Easter eggs, but
yeah, I'm looking forward to the school holidays actually. Just to chill a bit. Yeah, it's always so hectic.
Yeah, because you always try and fit everything into the school terms, right?
You do, absolutely. So what have you been up to, Tracy?
Yeah, so, you know, last year for me was such a roller coaster ride where my whole life kind of was just, I guess, thrown into the public eye and routine went out the window. And, you know, as a mum, I love routine. So when I don't have my routine, the wheels start coming off. And that really summed up last year for me is no routine, no control, everything up in the air. And I either had to make some drastic changes to my life. It was like, you know, a wake-up call or not. And I chose to, make some career changes, decide what was important and what isn't, and go from there. And I've never been in a better place. But, oh, my goodness, it was hard.
That's awesome news because the reason why I reached out to you is because I sort of watched from afar. I wasn't like a massive maths fan or whatever, but just the what I watched it for, I just couldn't believe the crap you got and how much hate. And I'm like, how is this woman even like surviving? Like, I get one little bit of criticism and it crushes me, like it actually hurts. And I was always thinking, how do you actually deal with all of that crap that gets thrown your way?
Yeah, but you know, criticism is like, it doesn't matter if it's from one person or 10 people or 100 people. Criticism is criticism and it still hurts regardless, you know. Even if you're a small business and you get a negative Google review, I mean, I'm in marketing, you know, I know that it can have detrimental effects. And it's kind of the same emotions, it's kind of the same, you know, feelings and impact on your life, no matter how many people it is, it's just magnified.
Magnified massively. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but you know, what got me through is realizing, and it took a while to realize, let me tell you, because it's hard not to take it so personally, is hang on a minute. It's a reflection of them, not on me. And I had to stop taking things so personally and realize I'm not the only one this happens to. It happens to all of us in varying degrees. Criticism and negativity, and especially being on social media, whether for yourself or for your business or whatever, yeah. It's a part of our life now. It's just part of it, and we need to kind of work with it rather than try and fight against it.
Yeah, that's good advice. And I think the thing is as well, a lot of people feel that it's almost like, obviously, that social media and getting on the keyboard is a barrier. You would actually never say the things to someone's face that you would type on social media, or the comments that you'd make. You'd never actually say that to anyone's face. And that's what I find so, I think people just make comments and actually don't even realise the magnitude and the consequences of them as well.
Yeah, 100%. And a lot of our, you know, mental health resources and resources around social media, it's always up to the person being bullied to sort it out. And I think more needs to be done in the reverse on why people are engaging in this behaviour and what we can do for them to realise the consequences of the messages they send, and actually more awareness around them to stop the bullies. I think way too much emphasis is put on the people being bullied, not the bullies themselves.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. A really, really good point. And because they're the ones that are normally hurt or have the issue projecting that onto some other person, and they don't even know who they are.
100%. Everything, hurt people want to hurt others, and they have something going on for themselves why they even want to engage in that type of behaviour. And I think that's the real issue that needs to be addressed here.
So it's having really empathy for the bullies, really, and trying to help them,
which is so hard when they're bullies and find that like empathy and compassion.
Yeah,
it's like so tough.
I know, but that makes you strong, hey? Like that's why you are doing so well and doing what you're doing, and I admire that, is because that's how you are dealing with it, with compassion. And not many people have the backbone or that inside them to actually be able to do that. Most people would just go back with hate. And so
well, this is the thing. When anyone criticizes us, the first thing we do is get usually defensive or angry and lash back.
Yeah.
And that is just, I've tried everything. Trust me. I've tried the defensiveness. I've tried the reasoning. Yeah. I've gone through like the 6-step anger process. And none of that like works.
No.
It actually just fuels the fire. And I think some of these people are just screaming for attention.
Yep.
And even if it's negative attention, they just want the attention and want to be seen and heard. We all want to be seen and heard. Some people just go about it in a negative way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just, I think, taking that control back. Because for me, my anxiety with all this happening came from being out of control.
Yeah.
And feeling like these people almost owned me and owned and dictated my life. Yeah. And that really spiraled me into this anxiety of, what can I do here? It's all just too overwhelming. But then when I decided to take my control back and I realized I couldn't control these people, but I can control how I relate to them and what I do, that's when things started turning around.
And how is your family during all of this time? Because sometimes I think when you're going through something yourself, you can sort of manage it, but it's your outside, your mum, your dad, your brothers, your sisters, your kids, like trying to protect them from everything as well. I think that would be really challenging.
100%. And this is the thing that my family are amazing for is, and I say this to everyone, we're not like a depressed person, or we're not an anxious person. We're someone that suffers from depression or anxiety. And my family and friends can support me as someone, I'm just Tracy. And yeah, I suffer from anxiety from time to time. And they don't really, it's not a big deal. It's not something we talk about, oh, how are you feeling sorry for me? They're just like, it is what it is. Let's just deal with life and move on from it. And I think that's really important with mental health, because family and friends think they're helping people, but you're actually putting a label on them, and you're treating them like 100% of their life is their condition.
That's
when really it might be 10 or 20% of their life.
Yeah, that's important too, because when you, and I think as you get older, like it can also be like an accumulation of all the cards you've been dealt through your life.
Yeah.
And you sort of, it keeps like going, you know, on top. And then all of a sudden, as you said, the wheels start to fall off, and that's sort of when everything comes down. But it is sometimes a result of your situation. So it's situational as well.
Oh, and that's so tough. And you're so right. It is, you know, I'm now 36, and it is an accumulation. And the things that you haven't dealt with, or some, you know, life decisions that have led you to this point.
Yeah.
Sometimes people find it really difficult where their current reality doesn't match what they thought they would be at that age. And it's that gap of the in-between that we're like, what the hell happened? And that's overwhelming in itself. And then you almost have this like freeze mentality where you're stuck and you don't know which way to go forward because you're scared the next decision is just going to take you further away and not close to where you want to be.
Yeah.
And it's just like this vicious cycle that, yeah, it's really hard. It gets harder as you get older.
Yeah, I think so. And you've got more responsibilities. So the more the mistakes you make actually filter through your family as well.
Yeah.
So I think that makes you more anxious, I suppose, to make sure you're doing the right thing all the time, which is almost impossible. It is impossible to do the right thing all the time.
100%. And this is probably why my social circle has got a lot smaller as I got older 100%. As well.
I've got like four friends.
I know, right? But this is where you have to really look at your life and go, well, what do I actually need to make me happy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And when you get really real with yourself, you don't, for me personally, I don't actually need that much.
No.
I don't need that many friends and that much to feel content and fulfilled. So my game plan has completely changed. And I think, as we've mentioned, if you're going after a game plan you set in your 20s and you're not there yet, instead of like trying to bridge that gap, maybe just relook at resetting your game plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's reassessing what ultimately is making you happy, because I could be completely wrong, but you know, when you're obviously an accomplished author and you're pretty successful anyway, but you know, getting on TV is a massive, like you could say it's an achievement. Lots of people want to do that. So you've gone through all that and actually probably realised that isn't actually what makes me happy anyway, even after you've done that.
Oh, yes, 100%. Look, no regrets. It's all life experience. But I was very much caught up with, you know, after being married for, together with someone for 9 years in my 20s, when I turned 30, it was like I wanted to just experience life. And I just went after everything. And it was very external. It's like I wanted to achieve the book. I wanted this. I wanted that. I wanted the TV. And it was all just like grabbing at these shiny things.
Yep.
And yes, like I'm very tenacious and very resilient. And I go after things and I'm not afraid to put myself out there. But then when I get them, it's like, oh, now what?
Is this it? Yeah, like, is this it?
Yeah. And like, and after all that, I really had the opportunity last year, and I know a lot of us, and I'm very grateful to have that breathing space, because a lot of us just don't, with, you know, different roles and work and being a mum, you don't get the breathing space to even sit with yourself and figure out what makes you happy. And I'm so grateful I got that opportunity. But yeah, that's when I realized the shiny stuff really doesn't matter. And I just pulled it all back to basics.
Yeah. You look really happy.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, part of me is glad, because sometimes, you know what, we have to push ourselves and we have to go after things, I guess, almost like just to prove that we can.
Yeah.
But then at some point you have to balance that, going after things and what you want versus what actually makes you happy.
Yeah. And it's almost, you know, sometimes when you're a mum and trying to juggle everything, it's sometimes filling a void or some sort of expectation that we have on ourselves. And I mentioned before, even when, you know, I've always been a working mum, and I remember going to a mother's group when Ed was a baby, and I used to lie to all the mums in the group and pretend I was still breastfeeding because I was too embarrassed to tell them that I wasn't breastfeeding. So it's all these expectations that people have, and it's almost like I'm not living up to things, so there must be something wrong with me, or I'm doing something not right.
100%. And being a new mum is scary and challenging as itself. I remember being in a mother's group, and it was a competition of, I went back to work after 3 weeks and I went back to work. Like, since when is it a competition to go back to work when you've just given birth, mate? I'd be lucky to leave the house after 3 weeks. You know what I mean? With, like, you know, clothes on.
Yeah, exactly.
So... you know, it's crazy the things that we do for others' expectations. And I think if we bring it all back to ourselves, what matters to us. If that's something that's important to you, then that's different, right? To doing it because that's what's expected of us. They're two very different things.
Yeah, it is. I agree 100%. So with your role, or when you went on television and things like that, how did were your family all supportive, or were they like, oh, maybe this isn't a good thing? Like, do they give you constructive feedback and tell you when they don't want you to do something pretty much? Are they honest with you like that?
Yeah, 100%. My family and friends were just very nervous for me because, you know, it's such a risk, and what would it do to my life? But they're supportive no matter what. So knowing that I have that support did make it easier for me to do that, because I knew that even if everything hit the fan, that I would have them to support me. And I think that was really evident for people that watched MASS, how supportive my family and friends were of me. But yeah, some of them thought I was crazy.
But how what is that saying? Life's pretty straight without twisties. Like, you've got
I love it. So true. I love twisties.
But you've got it. That's exactly like what we're talking about. It's still being able to put yourself out there. So really, it's just finding that balance between giving things a crack and actually being a role model to your children as well. Like,
giving things a crack, I think that's a great lesson to teach our children, of giving it a go. Like, my daughter's a bit of a worry wart, and anything new, she's like, she talks herself in and out of it 100 times. She's 9. And then when she does it, like, it takes a while to get there for her to try. And then she loves it 9 times out of 10. Absolutely loves it. You know, off we go. And, but we all go through that, right? And I think for myself, I'm just the type of person, I'm not afraid to give things a go. And there's so many people that sit in the spectator stand having a go at the people on the court, right?
Absolutely. Pointing the finger.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
Having, you know, it takes so much more to just give things a go than sit there and criticize the people that do. And I would rather be the role model, even if things don't work out, the one that's actually in the game.
Yeah.
And teach my daughter, you know what, as long as you're trying, it doesn't matter if it doesn't work out or not, but at least you're trying.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. I agree with that totally. So your daughter's 9. Yes. Has she asked to go on social media yet?
Oh, good question. Look, she takes selfies with my phone.
Yeah.
Like, I go to my phone and somehow she's taken like 100 selfies of herself on silly faces. So we're at that stage, which she thinks is hilarious. And she knows what social media is, and she knows how to use Google and stuff. But thankfully, she's not at the stage asking for her own social media account.
Yeah, that's good.
Age for that? I don't know. Maybe
I don't know. Yeah, my son's just started year 7 and my daughter is 9, and she's a selfie queen too. She's been asking for something called TikTok. I think it's like a Instagram for kids, I think. But I've actually made a deal with my daughter that if she stays off social media — I actually got this from a friend — if she stays off social media until she's 16, I'll buy her a car.
Nice. I like that.
It's probably going to be a $500 car that doesn't work, but she doesn't know that.
You don't need to get into the details, right?
But she's agreed to it, so I'm sticking with it. And
have you got that in writing?
Yeah, sign the contract. But my son, all of his friends are on it. He's the only one that doesn't have it. So
he's 11, 12?
He's 11.
Wow. See, I think that's young. High school to me, 13 plus, might be a little bit different for monitored or supervised use of social media. But yeah, it's starting younger and younger, isn't it?
It is. And he's so dirty because he's like, that's how what everyone talks about. And I'm like, well, that's really sad if that's all they talk about. So it's just trying to like balance it. And probably he's going to probably hate me for a few more years, but I just got to cop that on the chin, I think.
But you know what? Like, kids need time to be kids as well, right?
I agree.
And one of my girlfriends who has older kids similar to, you know, 12, 13, she just keeps them so busy with sports after school and all weekend. They don't have time to be on a phone on the sports field.
And I'm like, schedule them. Yeah.
That's a good strategy. Just, they're so busy, they just don't have the time.
Exactly. I love it. I love it.
When you're playing piano or on a football, you can't have a phone in your hand.
Exactly. You can't do that.
Exactly. Until they come up with a device where they can, you know, like filming themselves or like a GoPro, which will probably be around the corner, no doubt.
Exactly. Funny.
So you've recently completed a mental health first aid course. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, that's right. So when I went through my anxiety, and obviously when you go through something, you do a bunch of research on how to help yourself. Well, that's what I do. I just become Google MD.
Yep.
The stigma is still attached to what do you do with someone that has a panic attack or someone that doesn't look themselves or quite right? How do you approach that subject? So I started researching it and I became really passionate about this thing called mental health first aid. And I loved their ethos so much. So basically, it's, you know, how everyone knows what first aid is, doing CPR and doing a first aid course. It's exactly the same. It's basically becoming a first aid responder to know if something's not right mentally with someone. So I decided to become an instructor and train people to be mental health first aiders. Wow. And I think it can make a massive difference for people just to be that first port of call for someone. I mean, you're not the psychologist or the counsellor, but just to be that first port of call for someone that might be struggling.
Yeah, and I suppose it's having that that sort of qualification behind you, which would hopefully give people confidence to reach out because they know you're going to give them the right information.
100% exactly, yeah.
Because I find that Google can sometimes give you not the wrong information, but it's probably not the right information for the circumstance you're in at that time.
Exactly, and you know, the role of a mental health first aider, again, isn't to diagnose or to counsel, but it's to assist that person, whatever their struggles is, with enough to go and get help and create a plan with them, you know, which, you know, I think can just solve and save so many countless lives because we have such a prevalence of depression untreated in this country that then sometimes turns into suicide.
Yeah, I know. It's really, really scary. And every single person I talk to, I haven't spoken to one person that has not been affected or know someone that has been affected by depression or suicide. So it is an epidemic.
It is. It's the third biggest disease burden in Australia. And it's also 1 in 5 people in any one year, not in a lifetime, but in any one year, 1 in 5 people will have a mental health condition of anxiety or depression or substance use.
Yeah.
So that's literally, think about it, that's one in our family, for example, in our immediate family.
Mm. Yeah, it's actually scary. What as being a mental first aid responder, so what is your role? Like, is this a community-based role where people can reach out to you direct, or is it in a workplace?
It's both. It works for sports clubs, volunteering in your workplace, and it's really just recognizing the signs and symptoms because we know that early prevention will help people. So for example, 50% of people only have one panic attack or one depressive state. So where 50% on good have multiple episodes. So it's all about early intervention and prevention, and that's what first aid does. It's being able to recognise the signs and symptoms in someone that might be struggling so we can help them before it progresses untreated.
Mm. Do you think it's helped you personally?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You know, before the television show, I haven't had a history of mental illness. I didn't know what was going on for me. All of a sudden, I didn't want to leave the house when I'm a really social person. I became a completely different person. And if I had someone around me go, hey, this is what I think is going on for you, sometimes you can't see it in yourself. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's almost like our blind spot.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so great about having these people in our communities and workplaces. Because sometimes we need to go, hey, I've noticed these changes in you. What's going on, and just having that conversation.
Education. Like we're taught how to stay fit, healthy, what to eat, what not to eat, what to drink.
Yeah.
We're not really taught how to take care of ourselves mentally. I mean, it's becoming more mainstream now, but it's just exactly what you're saying there. People don't even recognize, you recognize when you can't do your jeans up because you've been eating too much.
That's true.
You can't recognize when the patterns, when the wheels are sort of starting to get wobbly before they fall off.
Exactly. And most people, when they start not feeling right, they'll go to their GP and just tell the GP their physical symptoms and not their mental symptoms. And then that starts its own myriad of challenges. So, for example, like depression and anxiety does have physical symptoms of, you know, eating too much or not eating, not sleeping, sleeping too much. So it's like you really need that help to be able to address everything that's going on. That's maybe it's not just a physical illness.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that you are a qualified mental health first aider, and you're going to be an instructor here in Perth as well?
Yes, yep. So I'm going to be doing public courses once a month in Perth through my studio in South Perth, but I also go into workplaces to do it for whole staff in workplaces as well.
That's awesome. That's actually really exciting. Is that because I've only obviously I said I've started this since November last year, so I'm new to all of this. But I wouldn't think that there's anyone else really doing that at the moment. Is there? Is this sort of like a new thing, or has it been around for a while?
It's been around for a while, but usually it's run in organisations with a high prevalence. For example, in aged care facilities. Or, you know what I mean, in mining and things like that, where people doing it in the community as public courses isn't as common as people doing it within workplaces.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So what is next for you, Tracy? Like, what are your plans? What are your goals over the next you know, 6-12 months for you personally and, like, as a career as well?
Yeah, so I'm working on my fourth book this year, which is going to be about cyberbullying, and it's going to involve me doing a lot of research, which I'm doing at the moment, and interviewing a lot of people. I think my list is at about 50, because what I notice is either personally or in business, especially women that own their own small businesses, is like they don't know what to do in bullying situations, right? So they don't know what to do if they've got negative Google reviews or, you know, negative comments on their social media. So that's what this book is for, is how to combat that. And it's something I'm super passionate about. Other than that is because I've traveled so much in the last 18 months, I'm really enjoying being back home in Perth and, you know, creating more of a routine, staying fit, spending time with my boyfriend and daughter. And yeah, it's a good balance.
Yeah.
I found my balance. I found my zen this year.
Good. And back into routine. I'm a massive routine person also. So when I'm not in routine, yeah, the wheels fall off for me too. So I sort of, yeah, understand where you're coming from with that. And just centering yourself as well, I think every now and then is really important, just as you've said throughout this whole chat, is getting back to basics.
Yeah, and I feel like when I have a strong foundation, I'm sure you can agree with routines, then you can kind of go after some big goals and you can try some things on. But when you don't have that strong foundation, then it's really hard to do that trying stuff. So
yeah, awesome. And I reached out to you from Erin, who I've met through some mental health organisations here in Perth. And you have agreed to come to a screening of Suicide, the Ripple Effect, which is in Rockingham on the 15th.
Yes, it's in May.
Thank you so much for that. So I'm trying to raise funds for Lifeline. I've done a bit of fundraising before, so I really appreciate it. I really hope that I can get the minimum amount of tickets sold so I can raise some funds for Lifeline as well. And obviously we're on a common goal here, which is awesome.
I love it. And I think like things like this, like movie and community engagement, is so important. Do you know what I mean? So I'm all for it. I can't wait. It's going to be a great event.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So when can we expect your next book out? Or is that too much pressure?
I know, right? Probably the end of the year. Probably around October, November time.
Awesome.
Yeah, because it's going to be like a range of different interviews, people sharing their stories, as well as practical how-to tips on what to do if this happens to you. So it's going to be both. Awesome. It's going to be, you know, because we all learn from other people's experiences, right?
Absolutely, 100%. So how can people get in touch with you or help you or help your cause or book a course with you? How can people get in touch and do that?
Yeah, so you can go on the Mental Health First Aid website, which is mhfa.com.au, and you can search for instructors, so Tracy Jewell, and then all my information is up there and all my upcoming courses and my details to get in touch with me. Plus you can read up on more about mental health first aid.
Awesome. You know what? I am going to jump on that and book in. So I will be, if no one's booked in yet, I'm going to try and get on to the next course you have available, because that's something that I've wanted to do. And especially talking to people, which you want to make sure that you're saying the right things and you've got something to actually back it up and not giving people the wrong information, which is so important in these sort of circumstances.
Oh, 100%. Well, I'll be seeing you soon then.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, Tracy. I really, really appreciate it. Love what you're doing. I'm a big supporter, and good luck with the book, and I can't wait to read it, and I'll see you on the first aid course.
Yeah, I look forward to it, Hayley. It's so great that we've connected. Yeah. We need more women like you sharing positivity. Oh, 100%.
Thanks so much. That means a lot. Awesome, Tracy. Well, take care. Talk
you
soon.
Too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Hi everyone. I hope you enjoyed that episode and really got something out of it. A huge thank you again to Tracy for taking time out of your super busy schedule to talk to me about life and how we can make differences in our community. If you wanted to become a mental health first aider, you can go to mhfa.com.au and have a look at the range of courses they have available to all members of the community. I am going to be doing one very soon in Perth. So if you jump on the same one as me, then I might see you there. Tracy has also kindly agreed to support a fundraising we are doing for Lifeline. It's the 15th of May at 6:30. It's screening of Suicide, The Ripple Effect, which is a Kevin Hines story. It's the first time it's ever been screened here in WA, and it's won multiple international awards. And I can't wait to bring it to Perth. And Tracy's been kind enough to say that she will come along. Tickets are available through my Facebook page. So if you go to events, you can click on the get tickets section and purchase your tickets soon. Tracy can be found and followed on Tracy Jewell on her Instagram page. Her handle is tracyjewell_ify. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Stay amazing.